Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, June 22nd, 2018. And with me today, I have the Mac Geek Gab crew. Dave Hamilton, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
It's cool to have you here. And John F. Braun, how's it going?
Fantastic.
I feel like it's been forever since we've had a chance to talk. So I'm really glad you're on today, John. I'm okay with you being on too, Dave.
Yeah, well, yeah, whatever, Jeff.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I'm just as happy to be here.
I love both you guys. We have a sponsor today. That sponsor is LinkedIn Jobs, and I have a discount for you if you're hunting for employees, so we will talk about that in a bit. But we might as well do some tech talk. And John, you were telling me before the show there's a couple things you're excited about, and I see that you have discovered the joy of being able to use your phone at an ATM.
Yeah, so I think this kind of what prompted me to want to discuss this a bit is that I think you had put up an article recently about Apple's effort in is it called Digital Key?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which I think is kind of the same concept, is that you're using NFC to...
The digital key uses NFC to unlock your car and turn the engine on and off.
Huh.
So this isn't something... Because, you know, iPhones have had NFC for a long time. I'm actually kind of curious about this, Jeff, because I've had kind of a crazy week and didn't dig into that particular topic earlier this week. So
okay.
Tell me... iPhones have had NFC for a long time, but when it first came out, it was painfully obvious to anyone that tried to look that the NFC circuitry inside the iPhone was not accessible to via API or anything that third-party app developers could use. It was there for Apple Pay only. And so has that changed, or is that changing? Is that what I'm hearing here?
It has not changed, and it will likely change. So there's this consortium of companies that are all working on these standards for using smartphones and other electronic devices as an authentication system, a key system, whatever you want to call it,
sure,
for controlling cars.
Got it.
And Apple is one of the members of this consortium. And what they did earlier this week was released a spec paper talking about what this new digital key 2.0 standard is going to be. And they expect to have it completed in 2019. And it does use NFC as the hook between your smartphone and your car.
But what you've experienced, John, is in the wild in existence, because it does leverage Apple Pay just at like ATMs and
yes,
things like that.
So the examples that I've seen recently, and actually I saw something a while back. So when I was traveling, I think it was going to the last Mac stock, in one of the airports, they had a Bank of America ATM, and they're like, hey, you want to, you know, you can hold up your Bank of America. What I discovered is that it would only accept a Bank of America debit card. It would not accept any of my others, even though, you know, they could have nailed me for a fee. But that was the first time I saw something like that. Now, my bank locally, Chase, will allow me, if I have my Chase debit card in my wallet, I just hold it up to the ATM, and that's step one. So rather than, you know, the chip or the Stripe, it's using NFC. I still have to type in my PIN, which one would think maybe it's kind of unnecessary since I'm authenticating with my fingerprint, but whatever. That was cool too. And then we also have our local train service here. I've noticed that on some of their ticket machines, though they now have an e-ticket, but if you want to still buy a physical ticket, they have a little box on the vending machine that says NFC. I've never actually tried it, but it's nice to see this, you know, both in the payment world, which I would expect, and then... you know, accessing other things.
John, I am so excited that you're getting up to speed on the joy that we've all been experiencing.
Well, he's ahead of me on this one. I have not been able to use this yet.
So. Well, you know what I'd like to see also is that, so I've actually been out and about some days where I actually forgot my wallet.
Mm-hmm.
But I have my wallet in the form of my phone. But the other thing is that I hear some places are doing this as well, is that I also have using LastPass secure notes. Mm-hmm. I actually have a scan of my driver's license. So if I got pulled over, we'd see if it would be nice if the officer would accept the scan of my license.
It would be nice, but I'm sure it still doesn't qualify. But
I wouldn't count on it. Yeah,
I think some states actually, I forget, a southern state actually does have an Apple Wallet version of your driver's license.
Yeah, I think Iowa has an electronic version of your driver's license as well. I don't know if it goes into Apple's wallet. But you know the ATM thing, John?
Mm-hmm.
I have seen more ATMs adding in the NFC sensor, which I think is awesome, because ATMs like gas stations are a popular vector for credit card skimming.
Oh yeah.
So I always, when I need to get cash out of an ATM, I always look for one that I can use my Apple Pay cards, and I just wave my iPhone over the little sensor, do my transaction, and I'm done. And just like any other Apple Pay transaction, my card number is never transmitted to anyone.
So why in the world has every gas pump not been converted to use Apple Pay? In fact, I don't think I've ever seen a gas pump that will use Apple Pay. I can use Apple Pay almost everywhere else, not gas pumps.
Yeah. So from what I understand, the lobby that's representing gas stations, because of course there's a lobby for everything.
Yeah, of course.
They managed to get this whole thing with the chip and pin process to exclude them for quite a while. So while everyone else has been required to get on board with this, and otherwise they get stuck with all of the fraudulent charges that can come through, gas stations don't have that. And
got it. Oh, okay, so maybe that's why they're behind the times on the this totally makes sense now. Okay.
Yeah, gas stations don't want to make the transition because they don't want to pay the money that it's going to take to update, to do chip and pin and cardless transactions.
Right.
Right. Well, I think another reason is that, and we've seen some, well, there's still some companies kicking and screaming against using Apple Pay because they want you to use their proprietary system. I actually seen, so we have a chain here called Cumberland Farms, and they offer, I forget, it's Easy Pay or something like that, but it's basically a barcode, from what I recall, that's tied to your debit card, and if you use their mechanism, they give you something crazy like a 10-cent per gallon discount.
Because yeah, you're of using course.
Yeah, their network and the debit network, which I think is usually
hold that thought for a minute, John, because I want to talk about our sponsor and then come back to that. And our sponsor is LinkedIn Jobs. And so if you are in the market to find new employees, you probably want to find the best qualified people for the job that you can. It just kind of makes sense because it's a lot of work to find someone and then hire them and then get them trained. And why would you want to spend time and money doing that if there's a high likelihood the person that you're hiring isn't the right person for the job? That's where LinkedIn Jobs comes in, because you can post a job to LinkedIn through the LinkedIn job service, and you're already getting your job posting out into potentially 70% of the entire United States workforce, because that's how many people are on LinkedIn right now. And the people that are looking for jobs on LinkedIn tend to be better qualified for those positions than people that are applying through just any other random job posting board. And there are, and LinkedIn is also the world's largest professional online network. So you're already in what I like to call a target-rich environment. So why would you not want to take advantage of this? So here's what you can do, because you are a Daily Observations listener. you can get $50 off your first LinkedIn job posting. What you need to do is go to linkedin.com/TDO and get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/TDO for $50 off. Terms and conditions apply. And keep in mind that there are 22 million professionals that are viewing and applying for jobs on LinkedIn every week. So when I say target-rich environment, I really mean it. And thank you, LinkedIn Jobs, for being our sponsor. All right. So, John, I said hold that thought. And here's the really funny thing. I forgot the thought myself. What was it that I said hold the thought on?
Well, I think we were just talking, you know, in general about various payment systems. Yeah, I left off with, you know, that they were using. Excuse me. I was speculating as to a reason why we don't have Apple Pay anywhere.
And
I think CVS is still another.
Oh, I remember. Right? I remember now where I was going with that. Okay. So you were talking about how different retailers have their own payment thing, loyalty thing, and would prefer you use that as opposed to Apple Pay, or they flat out won't let you use Apple Pay. And I think what that comes down to is that they want the data that Apple doesn't give you when you use Apple Pay. So so your transaction is essentially anonymous when you're using Apple Pay. But if you're using a store's own payment app, they've collected a lot of information about you. And that's information that they can leverage to potentially sell you more. So,
yeah. No, I can see that. Like my local grocery store, I use the loyalty card, and the thing is, every now and then when I go through the line, they give me a coupon for something that I've bought in the past. And I'm like, well, that's nice. I actually don't mind that because it's relevant to me. And sometimes it'll be, you know, a similar product from another vendor, and they're like, hey, we want you to try this. So, I can see why that's the case.
Okay, I'm going to change topics on this because. Since I have you here on the show, John, and you too, Dave, I want to take advantage of that. And John, one thing that you have been really good at is figuring out how to take hardware that's a few years old and still keep it as really useful and really relevant hardware. You know, like for example. You have, what, a 2012 MacBook Pro?
I have, which I'll call the last of the truly user-serviceable Macs, which is the mid-2012 non-Retina
and
MacBook Pro. Because even the Retina version, I believe, I think it had a fixed battery, but one of the components was not easily accessible, so I actually opted to not get the Retina, which some people would be like.
And so here we are in 2018, and you're using your 2012 MacBook Pro, and it's still going great. And you're using it for podcasting, and it's your workhorse machine. So
I don't use it for podcasting. That
you
use
don't?
The Mini for, but it is my daily driver. It's the machine that I always have.
So it's your daily driver machine. And I'm curious, what have you done with this computer to make it so that it's still something that is a totally acceptable machine for you today? And Dave, I'm betting you may end up coming up with some tips along the way too. So I am just really interested in hearing about this.
Well, I'd say I did two things, which I think everybody should do. So because you're able to access the hard drive and the memory in this very easily, this bad boy has 16 gigs of RAM, which, in my humble opinion, you can never have too much RAM, but you can certainly have too little RAM. And when you're in that case, a lot of times what happens, and this is leading to the second part, is that I took out and it was horrible, horrible rotational hard drive that I don't even think was...
Right. Yeah, it would have been a 5400 RPM hard drive. So
I think it was also a SATA 2, which this machine has a SATA 3 port. So I took that out and put it in an enclosure and use it to make backups. And I put a 1 terabyte Crucial SSD.
Ah.
So between that and having the as much RAM as possible, I think that's what makes it usable.
All right, and you know those
that
are
Mac, that Mac has Thunderbolt as well, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So you can also get USB 3 mm-hmm. on that Mac if you want, yep. right? And expand that way, which, you know, to me, that's it's really easy to overlook the options for expandability that Thunderbolt always brings. You know, we see it as another port on our Macs, and we think of it as a sort of an equal citizen to, say, you know, a USB port or an audio port or whatever. But really, Thunderbolt is a bus, and you can, you know, it's straight to the motherboard. It's just like putting a PCI card in your, you know, old tower PC or whatever. You can add any functionality that someone can dream up to plug into a bus, and you're good to go. So that even if your Mac only has USB, you know, 2, USB 3 with Thunderbolt, totally possible.
You know, that is awesome advice. And it's funny because as you said Thunderbolt, I look down at my desk, and right now, because I have a Thunderbolt dock connected to my computer, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 6 hard drives and a NAS connected, and it's all yeah. running back through one single port. Ultimately,
my 2011 MacBook Air, which still runs fine today, does everything that I would need it to do for travel. I don't know if I'd want to use it as my daily driver. That might be a little constricting at this point in time because mm-hmm. I can't add RAM to it. But, you know, certainly for trips like this, when I'm, you know, or any kind of travel, the Air is great. And because of Thunderbolt, I'm able to add USB 3 to it. I'm able to add gigabit Ethernet to it. Right. And I don't even like every computer I have now that's Thunderbolt capable has some manner of Thunderbolt dock, either that I travel with or with the iMac that's just permanently there. And that's sort of the thing, is I think about it as permanent stuff. Like my 2011 iMac in the studio has USB 3. Well, mm-hmm. it doesn't really, but it totally does because of Thunderbolt. It's no different than, you know, when I would plug a card into a computer, and now that's part of the computer, right? Thunderbolt yep. really becomes part of the computer. It's really fantastic. I'm mm-hmm. very thankful that the industry figured out that we could have that same level of expandability without needing slots.
Yes. So, Yeah. And when you said gigabit Ethernet, I realized, yeah, I'm actually running gigabit Ethernet for my computer because I'm connected to a dock.
Because you're connected to a dock. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's interesting to me when you hear, like when you say, you know, that the mid-2012 MacBook Pro is the last of the expandable Macs, you are not wrong, because replacing the RAM in that is possible, whereas mm-hmm. it's not in all future laptops especially. But in terms of, like, beyond that, beyond mm-hmm. RAM, in terms of expandability, every Mac that's out is, you know, I don't want to say infinitely expandable, but very expandable, more so perhaps than Macs, you know, 10 years ago were, because we didn't have Thunderbolt and we couldn't plug those types of things in. So,
No, I'm with you.
So the advice would be buy as much RAM and SSD as you can, because even replacing SSDs in current Macs, it's possible in some of them, but not easy. But definitely buy as much RAM as you possibly can. And then second to that, as much CPU as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. If it's a desktop Mac, I wouldn't even worry about the capacity of the SSD that's in there, because you can always add one externally and even boot from it, because Thunderbolt's going to give you, you know, you go direct to eSATA if you want. So,
yeah,
it really, you know, it's just a different way of thinking about it is what it is.
The only thing I dread is when I do get my next MacBook Pro, because I still think it serves a lot of my needs. I don't know if I want to get the very latest, because I don't want to create a collection of dongles, but it sounds like I may have to.
You know, the whole collection of dongles thing, I find to be fascinating, because I see so many people complaining about it. I've had a collection of dongles for my Mac laptops going back to my Pismo. It's
true.
It's just been part of the thing. And
it's just the issue is it's the dongles that you have when you buy the USB-C MacBook Pro are no longer relevant.
Yes. Right?
Or no longer enough. Right. Because you might need another dongle to make your old dongle connect. So I think that's where the complaint comes from. But I'm with you, Jeff. It's really not that big of a deal.
Yeah, and I'm used to like every 5-7 years, something like that, something has changed enough that when I get a new computer that I have to replace the dongles. And the old dongles go with the old computer, and the new dongles go with the new computer. To me, and maybe I'm just being too lenient here, I don't know, but to me, it's just part of the cost of buying a new computer. I'm probably buying new dongles to go with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just, you know, with this particular MacBook, it had a dedicated gig Ethernet port,
mm-hmm.
USB ports. It actually has a FireWire port and a Thunderbolt. So, you know, all the ports that I need to expand it are already built in. No dongles required. But USB-C is the future, I suppose, and I'll have to make a decision.
Yeah, it is, and the more I'm using devices with my Touch Bar MacBook Pro with Thunderbolt 3 via the USB-C port, the happier I am that Apple made this transition. Because this feels like a connector port that Apple's going to stick with for quite a while because it is so versatile.
Yeah, the other thing that makes me sad is that as far as I can tell, Mojave will support this machine. This is like the oldest machine, or at least I think one of the oldest machines that they claim will still be supported. I don't know if the next, you know, Grand Mojave or whatever they're going to call it, if that version of the OS is also going to support this machine. It remains to be seen.
Yeah, we'll see.
It depends on what they add, right? I mean, I think they've been very fair about, I mean, like, look, the current available OS, right, High Sierra, runs on my 2011 MacBook Air. Mojave won't. But the only reason that changed is because Mojave requires metal for the mm-hmm. iOS, you know, for the whole, I can never remember, the Marzipan,
yes,
Marzipan implementation. Right, so if they don't add anything to the OS that would require that in, you know, macOS 10.15, then I would assume that your MacBook Pro would continue to be able to run that, John. The metal thing is not a surprise, right? That's been an obvious. If you play any games, that line in the sand that Apple drew with metal years ago has always been this sort of, yeah, that's a thing, right? Because Apple didn't develop metal when Microsoft developed DirectX, right? All those games that can't run on non-metal Macs can run on the same hardware running Windows in boot camp because DirectX is a much older technology and those frameworks are there. So it's just how it goes. They just didn't write metal, you know, soon enough for many of us. But that's all. Yeah, it's not a hardware thing. That truly is just a software thing.
Yeah, and Apple's been, I think, telegraphing that the days of metal only are coming for quite a while.
Yes, for quite a while. And it's not a surprise. I mean, it's like, oh, well, here we are. Okay.
Yeah. So, John, I get your concern because this is the year that my MacBook Air got left behind because it won't run Mojave. And I want to complain, but I can't. I mean, it's right. A computer from, what, 2011?
Yeah, it's 7 years old. Man.
It's 7 years old.
That's awesome.
And it runs High Sierra great.
I was just going to say, the fact that you're complaining that it can't do something in the not-too-distant future indicates how well it actually works for you. Because if it was like, oh, well, I finally got to retire that stupid thing, thank goodness, that's very different.
Yeah.
No, and I see that as a positive.
I see it as a positive as well. Hey,
you're probably telling us that we're out of time, aren't you?
That's exactly what I'm doing. It's like you could read my mind.
I'm not logged into Discord, so I don't get those notifications.
Oh,
Okay. Yeah. So you didn't see where I typed time to wrap up.
Oh, I did.
See, and John's on top of it too. All right. Anyhow, yes, we are out of time. We do need to wrap up. John, thank you so much for joining me today. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for asking me on.
And Dave, even though I was giving you a hard time, it is awesome to have you on the show too.
Oh, it's great. No, I really enjoyed this. This is fun.
Yeah, this is fun. I enjoyed our mini Mac Geek Gab on daily observations. That was cool. Yeah,
same.
Yeah. And thank you to LinkedIn Jobs for being our sponsor all week. Head over to their website. Go to linkedin.com/TDO to get $50 off your first job post and find that perfect employee. And listeners, thank you for joining us. It's so great to have you here. We'll see you again next week.